You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Carl here for When It Was Cool Wrestling. I am Carl Stern. Thank you very much for joining me. Hope you'll check out my website, whenitwascool.com. where we have over 2,000 shows in our archives, many of which deal with classic old school professional wrestling and pro wrestling history. In our rotation of classic wrestling shows, we are back around to the History of Pro Wrestling at Madison Square Garden series, where I'm going through the entire history of pro wrestling at New York's very famous Madison Square Garden. Now, this was multiple buildings. We are in the second Madison Square Garden, as we're going to begin discussing today. We're in the early 1900s. If you go back into our archives at whenitwascool.com, you can listen to those later. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff in the early days, and the how the building gets sold and the name changes and the location changes and all this. And now we're about to get into a new era here. And I'm using for my research, this is Wrestling in the Garden, Volume 1, 1875 through 1939. This is it's one of Scott Teal's books. Graham Cawthorn, I think, also involved. Maybe it's J. Michael Kenyon. But check this out. You can buy a copy of it through our Amazon link at whenitwascool.com. All right, so let's pick it up right here. The stuff we have learned, just to catch you up to speed real quick, wrestling's been fake since the very beginning. It is so very obvious here at Madison Square Garden that the vast majority of these are entertainment, vaudeville-type acts rather than very serious matchups. The World Heavyweight Championship was created here in Madison Square Garden, essentially, with George Hackenschmidt defeating Tom Jenkins on last episode, and it seemed like much to do about nothing, as it was covered in the press at the time. I was really, really impressed upon me how just an ordinary event that seemed like, that had huge ramifications for pro wrestling history. Well, let's go now. The book says, henceforth, from the next 100 years or so, the principal names associated as promoters of Madison Square Garden Wrestling will be Jack Curley, Toots Mont, and one of the McMahons. Many other names will be mentioned, such as Jack Pfeiffer, Rudy Dusick, but they were booking agents who supplied talent to the promoters. In other cases, the promoter of record was the person who held the actual license. Now, for instance, the Johnston Brothers, names which appear quite often in connection to the Garden Wrestling after its 1949 revival, simply held the license under which the shows were presented. However, Toots Mont and the McMahons put together most of the cards. At this point in time, Jack Curley was the promoter, and this point in time being December 1st, 1909. And we've mentioned this on several episodes, and here it is again. Frank Gotch never won a match at Madison Square Garden. It's as hard as that is to believe, Frank Gotch lost very few matches. Once he won the World Heavyweight Championship, he never lost it, but he never, ever won a match in Madison Square Garden. And here he fails to meet the handicap in a match against Dr. Benjamin F. Roller. So your result is Dr. Benjamin F. Roller beats Frank Gotch in 15 minutes. As Frank Gotch had said, he could throw Roller in 15 minutes. He failed to do so. Therefore, officially your winner is Dr. Benjamin Roller. On the undercard of the match, we have one of the show, we have one match. Jim Asbell beat Jack McCormick. All right, so on February 9th, 1911. So 1910 apparently had no matches at the Garden. February 9th, 1911, we have George Hackenschmidt must throw Stanislas Sabisco twice in 90 minutes. And that's how handicap matches worked back in the day. It wasn't two people against one or three people against one or two. No, handicap meant a guy, usually a champion, would say, I can beat this person three times in an hour. And that was the handicap. And in order to win the match, they had to do that. That's largely a gimmick that is fallen by the wayside. I can't recall seeing a handicap rules like that in a long, long time. But what happens here is nobody gained a fall in 90 minutes. And so Stanislas Sabisco, even though he didn't throw George Hackenschmidt, neither did Hackenschmidt throw him, even though he had promised to do it twice. So Stanislas Sabisco, despite the fact he did not throw Hackenschmidt, won the match. And here's what the papers had to say. Russian Lion fails to throw the pole twice in 90 minutes as per agreement. New York City, February 10th, 1911. Stanislas Sabisco, the Polish giant, won the wrestling match with George Hackenschmidt, the Russian Lion, at Madison Square Garden. He achieved this triumph because, under the terms of the bout, Hackenschmidt had agreed to throw the pole twice in 90 minutes. He failed to do so, and no fall was made by either man during the stipulated time. This is from the Urbana Daily Courier in 1911. Now then, the book skips forward, but for reason, to 50 years later, to an article in England, October 23rd, 1950. George Hackenschmidt has filed a lawsuit against a magazine. And this is from Reuters News Service, October 24th, 1950. This is very interesting, so take note of this. A court awards George Hackenschmidt, 74 years old at this time, the one-time champion wrestler with 300 pounds, the equivalent of about $885, in damages for libel. Hackenschmidt had sued a now-defunct magazine, the News Review, for writing that he had lost a match 40 years ago at New York's Madison Square Garden when it, in fact, had ended in a draw decision. His lawyer said that in February of 1911, George met Stanislas Sabisco in a handicap contest. Hackenschmidt had to get two falls to win, while Sabisco had to win only one. Neither man pinned the other, and the contest was ruled a draw. So here, Hackenschmidt actually sues a wrestling magazine for calling this match a loss to Sabisco, as was reported in the newspapers. According to the terms of the match, Hackenschmidt did indeed lose the match. However, to summarize the court judgment, J. Michael Kenyon says it best. By avoiding being pinned by Hackenschmidt, Sabisco was, in fact, the nominal winner of the handicap bout. English courts are and have always been notorious for libel interpretation of libel and slander, for liberal interpretations rather, of libel and slander laws, especially when favoring the plaintiff. Hence, the 1950 court took the word of Hackenschmidt's barristers that since neither man won a fall, the 1911 bout had been considered a draw. My advice to you, be careful never to involve logical thought in anything having to do with professional wrestling. And yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. I would call that a draw, right? But that such was the case with handicap rules. So, I mean, technically speaking, it seems like a loss for Hackenschmidt. For the normal viewer, seems like a draw, right? I don't know. I guess Hackenschmidt won a court fight to call it a draw. What a strange thing 50 years after the fact. What about that? Here's a news article from Chicago Livestock World, published Monday, September 18th, 1911. They may not tear down Madison Square Garden after all. A new law has made it possible to hold bloody prize fights in the great city, and New York will hardly contest to have it abolished now. Prize fights in New York pay better than artistic or scientific entertainments. But then, lest we be deemed partial, we do not hesitate to say that Chicago pays more for a fake wrestling match than for some things more worthwhile. Again, 1911. It's already well established. We've talked about this over and over since at least 1870 and probably earlier. Everybody has known pro wrestling, for the most part, is fake sports entertainment, not real. Were there shooting matches? Yes, there were some. By and large, not the case. December the 6th, 1911, attendance of 3,000 people come out to the garden. And we get a different type of challenge match here, different type of gimmick match. Rysevich, no idea who Rysevich is. Rysevich says he must defeat six men within the span of 2 hours. Giovanni Rysevich beat Harry Pitofsky, August Faust, wow, what a name, straight out of DC Comics, August Faust, George Sindel, Paul Schmidt, Hans Lerner, wow, he sounds like a dude who needs to be building rockets, and Fritz Moll. All these sound like circa World War I, World War II spy names. Let's send in Giovanni Rysevich to defeat the evil spies Harry Pitofsky, August Faust, George Sindel, Paul Schmidt, Hans Lerner, and Fritz Moll. Yep, that could have been easily out of a spy mag. Note, Rysevich said he would give $1,000 to any of the six men he couldn't beat in 20 minutes. The New York Times describes it as such in their newspaper Thursday, December 7th, 1911. Giovanni Rysevich pins giants to mat in few minutes in garden bouts. Giovanni Rysevich, the champion heavyweight wrestler of Italy, made the first appearance on the mat in this country at Madison Square Garden last night, and in less than 20 minutes of actual grappling, wiped up the mat with six giant foreigners. The Italian didn't have to expend himself much and pinned each one with his bulky opponents to the mat, to the canvas, with simple wrestling methods. I guess Italians have always been quite popular here in the garden, as will be the case historically moving forward, right? Each one looked strong enough to carry a piano around with ease, but they possessed a small amount of knowledge in wrestling. Yankee Rogers, who was scheduled to appear, was missing, and the crowd wildly called for him. It was announced that Yankee Rogers had finished a match and was coming this week, and his manager would not let him tackle the big Italian. Six overgrown wrestlers were such easy picking for Rysevich that someone yelled, quote, "Is Frank Gotch in the house?" It would have been different if he had been. Yep, he might have lost another match in the garden, apparently. Christmas Day, December 25th, 1911. Attendance of 4,000 people. A referee is Tom Jenkins. Yes, the former American heavyweight champion. Tom Jenkins, one of the great wrestlers at the turn of the century. We have Giovanni Rysevich is going to face a name, well-known wrestler here in our country, and guy we've talked a lot about, Stanislaus Zbyszko. And our result for Christmas 1911, did Rysevich run through Zbyszko like he did the others? No, not really. Stanislaus Zbyszko defeats Giovanni Rysevich by decision. In your undercard, Nicola Nicola Montagano, also known in other places as Young Mundy, beat Ignatz Galiski, known in other places as Young Sharky. Wow, boy, they like these difficult names here. John McLaughlin, not to be confused with Pioneer-era wrestler James H. McLaughlin, John McLaughlin beat Victor Pierce. Jim Galvin beat Neil Olson. And our coverage of this affair comes from the New York Times, Dateline Tuesday, December 26, 1911. So what does the largest paper in America have to say about this here wrestling attraction? Italians break up big wrestling bout. Thought Rash Vish won. Swarm around their idol and carry him from the mat. The wrestling match at Madison Square Garden last night between Giovanni Rashvich, the Italian heavyweight, and Stanislas Zabisco, the giant Pole, came to a sudden end in the second bout when the Italian's enthusiastic admirers mistook referee's Tom Jenkins' slap on Rashvich's broad back as a signal for a fall. Jenkins tapped the Italian because one of Zabisco's shoulders was off the mat. Rashvich had Zabisco pinned to the floor in a deadly crutches of a crotch and half Nelson hold. One shoulder was on the green mat and the other was on the white canvas. The Italian knew he had his man down, and when he felt the referee slap, he got up and walked to his corner. This was the signal for an uproar. Thousands of enthusiastic Italian fans jumped from their seats and rushed around the ring, and the special policemen were powerless to stop them. Rashvich was grabbed by admiring friends and carried in supposed triumph around the garden. The big Pole stood dumbfounded, waited for the Italian to come back and wrestle some more. Referee Tom Jenkins was besieged with questions. He said it was no fault that he slapped the Italian to make him get back to the center of the ring. Rashvich does not understand English and did not wait for an explanation. By the terms of the match, one fall for him meant victory. For half an hour after this happening, the Italians, including Enrico Caruso, the Italian tenor, stood about and made the garden shake with their cheers and yells. I wonder if he sang them a song. I hope so. They were satisfied that Rashvich had won the one fall, and the officials of the show said that if anyone had insisted on the Pisa giant coming back to get the fall over with again, he was afraid the garden would be torn down in a riot. So the match came to an unsatisfactory finish. According to the referee, neither complied with the conditions of the contest, and therefore, it was no match at all. Zabisco agreed to throw Rashvich three times in an hour and a half, and if the Italian got one fall, he was to be declared the winner. So again, another one of these convoluted match rules here. Rashvich says he got his fall, fair enough, and declares he was a winner. The referee asserts that the fall was illegal because the victim, Zabisco, was not on the mat. The crowd didn't number more than 4,000, but it had the cheering power of 40,000. It was very much in the favor of the Italian. There were many Polish there to admire the Polish lawyer grappler, but their cheers were hopelessly drowned out in a mad outburst of applause, which occurred every few minutes from the Italian. Stanislas Zabisco won the first fall in 37 minutes 50 seconds after he had let Rashvich wear himself out to an almost exhausted condition. When the Italian was panting like a deer, Zabisco got a combination cross arm hold and with all the power and weight of his Herculean body, crushed the Italian to the mat in the irresistible grip. Zabisco weighed about 250 pounds and the Italian in at 225. The big Pole was strong as a lion and mauled Rashvich around the canvas easily. Zabisco doesn't know many of the tricks of the finer points of wrestling, for several times he had his opponent in a dangerous position when an ordinary wrestling hold would have finished him. When Zabisco saw that he could get no effective clutch on his opponent, he took things easy and let Rashvich pull, maul, and tussle away at his big body. Rashvich worked so hard trying to turn the Pole over that the perspiration poured off him in extreme. Both wrestlers looked fat and anything like athletes. Wow, paper just calling it like I see it here. Zabisco seemed to have enough strength to push over a bridge, but he didn't know how to use it. Rashvich's arms were too short to get around the Pole's great waist. Too fat to get a hold on. Stanislas Zabisco was barefooted, and Rashvich often tried to get a toe hold, and his efforts to extract pain from the Pole's big toe would have made Frank Gotch chuckle with glee. Rashvich was tired after the first, but he was rubbed and revived by willing hands. He came out of his corner for the second bout with a spring in his step. Rushing at Zabisco, he threw him to the canvas hard with a leg hold, and after a few minutes' hard work, he had a crotch hold and half Nelson. But and put every ounce of strength in the final effort to jam the Polish giant down. Slowly but surely, the Pole won, and the crowd saw that his shoulders were both pinned to the floor. They thought that the referee Jenkins' slap meant a victory for the Italian, and they waited no more. A wild scramble for the ring followed, men tumbling and falling over each other to climb into the ring and congratulate the Italian hero from Pisa. Hundreds of fish horns joined in the noise-making, and such a nerve-jarring, ear-splitting racket the garden had seldom heard. The management was unable to check the outburst of the Italian enthusiasm, and although the referee said it was no fall, Rashvich was declared the winner by his fellow countrymen. When they finished cheering Rashvich, they turned to Caruso and Scotty and kept up the noise until the singers had left the garden. It was a great night for the Italians, and they did not pay any attention to a little technicality like one shoulder not being down on the mat, even if the rules of wrestling do say something about it. Referee Tom Jenkins was in a bad fix. He tried to explain what he meant by slapping Rashvich on the back, but his explanation was lost in the racket. Hats were thrown into the air, papers were sent flying, and everybody was so excited that the management could do nothing but let the excitement cool down and allow the people to file out of the garden. Among the notable Italians present to enthuse over Rashvich was Enrico Caruso and Antonio Scotti of the Metropolitan Opera Company. Chevalier Borsetto, proprietor of Il Progresso, and several members of the Italian consulate of this city, Cesare Conte, the importer, Ernesto Urbartino, one of the Waldorf Astoria chefs, and scores of others. Thank goodness he didn't list them in here for me to have to pronounce their names. The top two galleries were crowded with cheering Italians and Polish, but the arena set seats were not half filled. By the way, this article keeps using the term Poles. I don't know if that's derogative. I don't know if that's a slur or slang. It's just what's written, so I'm trying to replace that with Polish just so I can be all, you know, politically correct here in 2023 and don't get canceled because I don't know whether Pole or Polish is correct. That's the New York Times, not me. Anyway, the names of the wrestlers who took part in the preliminaries were assumed to fit the occasion. Young Sharky, alias McDoug, beat Ignace Galowitsky. He was thrown twice by Nicola Montagano and Young Mundy. Montagano tossed Galowitsky down for keeps after 12 minutes of wrestling. Montagano, to show that he had no ill will against his victim, kissed him affectionately, then threw him again in 4 minutes. Johnny McLaughlin, the Irish lad, threw Victor Pierce of Vienna with a half Nelson in 11 minutes and 30 seconds. Jim Galvin, who is champion of something or other in Ireland, and Neil Olsen, the Great Dane, not the dog, had a real old-fashioned slugging, gouging match. Galvin and the Dane are old actors at the game, and they made the emotional crowd believe they were going to tear the hair out by the roots. Galvin won the first fall in 10 minutes and 40 seconds, and Olsen took the second with a flying fall in 6 minutes and 40 seconds. Then Galvin wanted to fight, or made believe he did. Referee Johnny Dunn was in the fray too, and just ducked out of Galvin's gate-like swings. All this pleased the crowd. It was a well-acted draw. All right. So now we got what's titled here as a challenge for Zbyszko. So clearly we're in the era here of Stanislaus Zbyszko. Harry Pollock, manager for Rakevich, the Italian wrestler who figured in the unsatisfactory bout with Zbyszko at the Garden Monday night, yesterday came out with a challenge to Zbyszko for a return match. The challenge reads as follows. Quote, "I want to get Zbyszko in a finish match with Rakevich, and I am willing to back the Italian for any amount up to $5,000 and wrestle winner take all. The outcome of the match at Madison Square Garden on Christmas night was just as unsatisfactory." The outcome was just as unsatisfactory to Rush Veach and myself as it was to the general public. The whole trouble was due to the fact that the Italian could not understand English and that Tom Jenkins is not a master of the language of Sunny Italian. When Rush Veach left the ring, he thought he had won the match. And when he was told in the dressing room that a question had been raised, he wanted to return to the mat. His countrymen, however, prevented him almost by brute force from doing so. He will take on Zbyszko either in public or in private and will bet almost an unlimited amount, as I have received more than a dozen communications today from wealthy Italians in this city offering to back their champion for any amount that I can get down. Zbyszko or his manager, please write. This again, New York Times, December 27th, 1911. And we do, in fact, get a rematch, although it does not apparently go the way the Italians hoped. February 12th, 1912. Stanislio Zbyszko beats Giovanni Rastovich in 54 minutes, 52 seconds. Headlines, the Italians are broke. Rastovich, Zbyszko, Frost last night was expensive proposition. From the Milwaukee Journal, I guess reporting it from some sort of news wire service, New York City, Giovanni Rastovich, the latest wrestling phenomenon to be exploded, is receiving the condolence of his countrymen today over his poor showing last night. After being pinned to the mat by Zbyszko after 54 minutes and 52 seconds of grappling, in which he failed to show much form, he refused to continue. Like George Hackenschmidt, he blames his poor showing on an injured knee. Many Italians had wagered their entire savings on the swarthy giant. All right, so thus is the tale of Giovanni Rastovich. Now, it is to be noted, following this, Frank Gotch, heavyweight champion of the world, retired on April 1st, 1913, and relinquished his claim to the world championship. Now, you have to remember, Frank Gotch retired about as many times as Terry Funk did. He would retire, come back, retire, come back, retire, come back. He even, before his death, broke his leg in a training for another comeback after his retirement. And it was believed that was his last match. He did, in fact, have another match afterwards, but then died in 1917. But look, just understand this. Anytime a Frank Gotch retirement's mentioned, he didn't put a lot of stock into it. So, since Frank Gotch had retired only twice in 1913, he will have to get busy or he won't retire as many times as he did in 1912, said the Pittsburgh Daily Post. So, even the newspapers are tired of that. April 13th, 1913. All right, we go back to the Madison Square Garden. May 19th, 1913. Small crowd, 2,500. The Zbyszko brothers, apparently not much of a draw, but you're going to recognize a few of the names on here. Stanislio Zbyszko beat Ramon Cesaro. Stanislio's brother, Vladek Zbyszko, beat George Sandilli. And George Lurich, that's another name we'll see quite a bit, beat Paul Sampson, 2-0. May the 28th, 1913. And I do not have an attendance for this match. George Lurich beats Stanislio Zbyszko after 16 minutes, 21 seconds when Zbyszko's unable to continue. And we'll have more about that in just a second. Vladek Zbyszko beat Paul Sampson in 34 minutes. And George Bothner, another well-known name of the era, went to a draw with Luigi Bull Montana, 15 minutes. Dateline is Thursday, May 29th, 1913, the Scranton Republican. Zbyszko collapses in bout with Lurich. Stanislio Zbyszko, the Polish wrestler, collapsed from weakness in his bout with George Lurich of Russia after 16 minutes and 21 seconds of wrestling at Madison Square Garden tonight. The Polish entered the ring with his head swathed in bandages as a result of an injury received in a match with Constant Le Martin at Montreal last Saturday night. After a minute's wrestling, the bandages came off, showing a wound over the left temple. Zbyszko remained on the defensive throughout until his collapse. The referee, Charlie White, refused to let the men continue. After several minutes' rest, Zbyszko was able to walk to his dressing room. Vladek Zbyszko, his brother, threw Paul Sampson of Germany with a body hold in 34 minutes. Now, Scott says in his notes here, Stanislas Zbyszko was rumored to have suffered a concussion as a consequence of the severe fall he experienced against Le Mardin in Montreal. Brooklyn Daily Eagle reported, quote, that he was in no condition to attempt to overthrow so wiry and powerful an opponent as Lurich, and was manifest to those familiar with Zbyszko's style 5 minutes after he began wrestling. The Polish champion appeared with his head wrapped in a large bandage, which dropped off after barely 2 minutes of the struggle, showing a plaster covering to his wound of Saturday, and this in turn splitting and unfolding, often dropping into his eye, and seemed to cause him much trouble. Okay, so now let's go to the, this will be our last note for this, is we're going to get into the international tournament coming up, which is, we'll talk more about. Then this is from The Day Book, Volume 3, published in Chicago. I'm not sure what that is. Saturday, November 8th, 1913. It says, something happened yesterday in the Morrison Hotel that we have been waiting for these many days. The only trouble was that it did not go far enough. Yes, sir, two prize fight managers met and something more than words were exchanged. In short, Charlie Cutler socked Tom Jones in the jaw and was ready to repeat, but Frank Gotch, wrestling champion, interposed his bulk and put the damper on further hostilities. Bad blood has existed between Cutler and Jones for some time. Cutler discovered Jess Willard and assumed his management. When the big Missourian was talked of as heavyweight champion, Jones, former manager of Ad Wolgast, stepped in and snapped him from under Cutler's wing, taking him to the coast. Charlie was sore. Yesterday was the first time he and Jones had met since the switch in managers. Cutler wasted no time, but swung to Jones's jaw and knocked him against the wall. He started after the human phonograph again. I guess that's, I don't know, Jimmy Hart gimmick. I'm not sure what's going on there. He started after the human phonograph again, but Gotch grabbed him. Then Jones tried to explain, but for once found his vocal organs were not working convincingly. Can you beat it? Two prize fight managers actually engaging in a fight without the use of typewriters. But our idea of nothing to fight over is who shall manage Jess Willard. All right. So next episode, we'll return to Madison Square Garden. And again, our attendances are not too great. I mean, we're still in the 3,000-ish range if they're ever even reported. And we will pick up in the year 1914. Next episode where we talk about the history of pro wrestling at Madison Square Garden. If you enjoy these history segments, and I certainly hope you do, you can find lots of them at whenitwascool.com. If you're listening to this at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, or on one of the free feeds out there, we have so much more to offer than you probably even know about at WhenItWasCool.com. We have over 2,000 shows in our podcast archive dealing with retro pop culture, pro wrestling history. When I say retro pop culture, I'm talking about old movies, old TV shows, comic books, books. Anything, society, anything doing with retro life back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, come by and check us out. I bet we have some podcasts you'd love to hear. I'm doing a Patreon drive this month at this time, and you'll get instant access to, like I said, over 2,000 shows. So if you love wrestling history, my goodness, we've got more than you can listen to for the rest of the year. If you'll just sign up and start downloading, saving up these shows, listening to them at your convenience, I promise you, you'll have more than you can listen to for this whole year. Check us out at whenitwascool.com. That supports shows just like this one. Well, thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you here again soon with another show.
whenitwascool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.